always with it, here to talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. That's the point of the platform. So if you guys have questions, raise your hand, request to be a speaker, and Chris will fire you up, and we can talk about whatever.
For sure. I see Monica's in here. Welcome, Monica. Glad that you're able to join the show. Glad that you've been a fan of the show for a little bit. I admittedly was geeking out when your husband got hired to at Georgia Tech. I was born in Atlanta and really Georgia Tech fan. You know, survived the triple option years, the Calvin Johnson years, which that was a lot of fun. It was always weird seeing a 6'5" wide receiver that wore number 21. It just, some things just didn't look right. Got to see a little bit of Darren Waller down there as well. So big Georgia Tech fan. Just really excited for you and your family. But again, if anyone wants to hop in with questions, we are accepting all questions at this time. Just a request, and we'll get you in and get you in and start firing them. You launched a little bit early, Zach. You been busy today, Zach, or after the morning show? What'd you get into?
I actually made banana bread with my daughter, Chris, and my son is homesick right now. He's been sick.
That does not fit the narrative, Zach. Wait, that doesn't fit the narrative.
No, I know. I don't have custody of him, right? I'm not allowed to see him. I'm going to jail for 900 things. It's just crazy. It's crazy how all this stuff is happening. The guy on Twitter tried to tell me I didn't have my kids 7 of the last 9 days. I'm like, that's weird, because there's some random 2 kids that keep coming here. I don't know what to do with them then.
They just keep showing up. Say, I don't trolls. Know whose kid you made banana bread for, but it must not have been yours.
But right? you know what? Like, I know better. I shouldn't even entertain trolls. I know that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just too tempting. I'm like, you can't be this dumb. Sure. Like, you just can't be. I don't know what else to say. And so I get caught. I'm like, this guy, I got to tell this guy, call him an idiot, right? And I need to stop. I know I need to stop, but I just can't help myself.
Yeah, they live for that. You mentioned off season. I think it's really interesting, because like there's like a couple silly seasons in sports during like the kind of lull of football, and one of them is like coaching hire. Everyone has the coach staff, best coaching staff on the planet, and then you get like the draft silly season with everybody's a source and everybody knows something about somebody, and that ties to NFL stuff. And then you get the you know, every, I think Bill Green always talked about it. Every Jimmy and Joe is an All American during practice. Like, all of them, everybody.
Recruiting's my favorite, right? Every single class that Ohio State's ever signed, it's like, holy shit, this is the, like, they're going to be all NFL players. And it's like, I mean, that's not true, right? It's never been true. It's not going to be true. But you just get caught up in the allure of the unknown almost. And Urban used to say it all the time. You know, the day they arrive on campus is like Christmas, because you have this pretty present that's been wrapped so nicely. It looks amazing. But once they get on campus, you get to open that thing up and find out what's on the inside. Like, what do you really got? It could look like a pretty present, but you might open it up and be like, damn, this kid's soft, doesn't go hard. He's a pussy, whatever it is. And you're like, damn, that looked way better when it was wrapped up to when you opened it. And sometimes you open up a little box, you're thinking it's a gift card, and son of a bitch, it's keys to a car. You open it up and you're like, whoa. With Monica here, you could say Paris Johnson is like that, right? He was a pretty present, and when it was opened up, guess what? It was even better on the inside. Who he is as a person and his ceiling. So you see it all the time. I saw it, you know, with Terry McLaurin, right? You thought you were taking a project guy, and you know what? You open it up and you're like, wow, this kid is a grinder. He goes so hard. He's going to be a great player. And you're just pleasantly surprised, right? So gotta love it, man. And same with coaches, right? You hire a coach to come in and you're like so fired up. This coach is the best. Like, look at his resume, because there's a reason why they get hired, right? There's a reason why a kid gets recruited. It's because of, they see potential, right? They see a great fit. And then sure enough, that coach might show up and you're like, damn, our receivers suck. This coach is awful. So it's always fun to find out what you got. And we're going to find out in September, what we got on the defensive side of the ball with Jim Knowles coming in. They bring in 2 more guys, which I think are excellent hires. And I mentioned it before, if you haven't, Kobe Bryant, it should be on the show next week, the main show next week. He's a Thorpe Award winner from Cincinnati. So you're going to find out what you're getting from Cincinnati and from Kobe's experiences.
Yeah, no, straight up. That's going to be a really good interview, and I'm really excited to have him on next week and kind of pick his brain about, you know, coaching staff stuff in general, and kind of just like what kind of coaches kind of are being brought. And we told you, we said it early. It wasn't like us, you know, cracking a big code, but one of the big things was the the way Jim Knowles was being talked about when he came in, it became very clear to Zach and I, kind of through who he talked to and kind of through how the language being presented, that he was going to come and bring his guys in. I mean, when they classify someone as like the head coach of the defense, that tells me that that guy's going to want his guys in there. So the cleaning of house doesn't surprise me at all. And it's almost, you know, it's really exciting. I mean, when somebody's job and they have the professional pressures of like, to keep my job and to get these bonuses and to keep this $1 million, $2 million salary, for me to keep that, the one thing I'm going to have to do is make sure this defense is as good as possible. And you're going to want to do that with your guys.
Well, yeah,
and so I do think that's really important.
I don't even know if it matters, like the salary and the title. I just think in general, unless you're promoting from within, if you bring an outside guy in to run a different defense, right? It's one thing if like Urban hired Chris Ash, but he told Chris Ash what defense to run. So it wasn't like Chris was coming in and teaching this system that he'd been running and needed to bring guys with him. This was Urban's, you know, dreams defense, right? It was the Pat Narduzzi defense. And so Chris, along with the other coaches, had to really study how they were going to teach it because Chris was a quarters guy, but he came in and, you know, he had his staff set. Urban just brought him in to, you know, run the show with Luke, and that's what he did. And so it's a little different when you bring in Jim Knowles to run an entirely different defense. You know he's going to want some coaches of his that are familiar and that he's familiar with, because it's like a foxhole mentality, and not to relate it to war, but it's the closest thing you can find to it. Is you're in that foxhole in that defensive staff room, you better have guys you trust, guys you know you can count on, and guys that are going to, you know, get the job done for you as a coordinator, or else you might be out too. And so it's not surprising that Ryan made the moves he made, but definitely an exciting time for the silver Nerf bullets is what I call them right now. Until they get their ammo up, they are the silver Nerf bullets.
Yeah. Do you think that that Ryan Day kind of learned that, you know, I need to be completely hands off? Because there was all that talk about, like, when Kerry was running it, one of the things was about, you know, Ryan was set in his ways and wanted to run the defense that he thought was the most difficult to prepare for. Do you think he's completely hands off now? It's like Knowles' thing, whatever he wants to run, he can run.
Well, Ryan's a great football coach. He'll never be completely hands off. I also don't believe that he had a mandate that they had to run press coverage with a cut split, and if the guy cracks, he really wanted two guys to get taken out of the defense and nobody to set the edge. I can't imagine Ryan saying to them, I want that to be our defense. I also can't imagine him saying, I want our linebackers to get stuck on blocks or avoid the block in the wrong gap and create creases for the run game. Because, see, the issue is not that the style of defense. The style of defense they were running was the same type of shit that that they ran before, and it just didn't work as well, right? And the reason why is it wasn't being coached very well, and the players weren't developing very well. And so that's just the reality of it. It wasn't a one-high cover three defense that was just getting gashed and it was archaic. It was that it wasn't getting coached as well as when Jeff Hafley was running it. So that's why he made a change. Now, he's obviously going to let Jim Knowles run Jim Knowles' defense, but he still will be involved. He still will watch the film, be in that staff room periodically, asking questions. Why are we doing this? What is this drill for? Why did you call this defense? I mean, that's what a head coach does, right? He pushes these coaches and challenges them. Even if Ryan knows the answer or thinks he knows, he'll ask a question just to hear them, you know, come back with conviction and really hang their hat on something. I mean, he's coaching coaches. The head coach's job is to coach coaches, right? And so that's how he'll approach it, just like he did with the previous two defensive coordinators he had.
Is there situations where, like, maybe because an offense is so good that you go up against in practice, that sometimes it's like, oh, like, maybe our defense isn't that bad, but the offense is just so good, they're kind of exposed to things. Like, if we, you know, kind of thinking, okay, well, no offense we face is going to be this good, so you kind of excuse some things, or does that not really happen in the coaching world?
No, it happens. I mean, we used to talk about it all the time in my room, because you got to think about the era of defense that I went against, or not I went against, my players went against day in, day out in practice. I mean, you went out to practice, and you had Eli Apple, Garyon Conley, Denzel Ward, and Marshawn Lattimore sitting over there in one-on-ones playing press coverage. You're like, fuck me. These are four first-round corners, like some all-pro corners. And, you know, It's fine for Michael Thomas, but you get to that fourth best receiver, he's going against a first rounder still. And so we used to talk about it all the time. Like, listen, one, it's great because it's iron sharpens iron, right? You're going against the better competition in practice than you ever will on a game day. And so that's one, you're improving at a higher clip. And two, when you go out on a game, you're like, this shit is easy. This kid's terrible. And he might be a third rounder. But you just, it's like, it's no different than swinging with a donut on a baseball bat, right? You swing that thing 30 times before you get in the box. You take that donut off, get in the box, and you're like, whoa, this bat is light as a feather. It's the same thing. You're going against freaking Denzel Ward every single day. When you go out against Michigan State's corner, you're like, ooh, this is cake. This is like scout team.
I'm saying, like, maybe, like, does that kind of control? I mean, like, because you would think our offense probably in practice was getting beat pretty bad. I mean, the defense was getting beat pretty bad by the offense.
Maybe
that led to some, like,
here's what I have seen. I have seen defensive coaches they're usually ones that failed. Shiano did this all the time. They would coach defensive techniques and stuff to stop Ohio State's offense, right? They would coach them to do things to try to just game plan us. And it's like, bro, you don't play us. You need to just be teaching them whatever fundamentals that you want to teach them and ensure the fact that they're ready to go play your defense against an opponent. So yeah, I mean, I think if you're just getting gashed by an offense all day long and you start to tweak and adjust, you know, what you do, that can be problematic, because now all you're trying to do is stop CJ Stroud, and you don't ever have to play CJ Stroud. That's not the goal here.
Yeah, no, I always wonder if that kind of is kind of what happened with the defense. I mean, everyone, you know, can look like an All-American on defense, and that's kind of what things were being said. But, guys, if anyone has any questions, Garrett, Cody, James, if you guys want to fire questions, we are all ears. And then also, if you want our quest, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. Yeah, thanks, guys. So my question is centered around the defense. With Jim Knowles coming in, sounds like he's going to be using the safeties a little bit more than we have historically. And, you know, when I think back to any great Buckeye defense, there's always one big playmaker on that side of the ball, whether it be Chris Gamble, you know, Shazier. We have, you know, more recently Chase Young. You know, now looking forward to this defense coming up, is there a certain position that you guys feel is primed to be that difference maker just because of scheme? And then if so, maybe what current player would you see kind of slotting into that really well over the next couple of years? Thanks.
So I think, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. There's far more safety involvement. The defense we've been playing is a single safety defense, and a lot of teams play single safety defenses, but Ohio State didn't typically have two safeties in the game. They had a more of a slot corner, nickel, whatever you want to call them, that was a different body type. Like, and they did time, they rolled coverages at times to get a different guy in the post, but this defense vastly different. The position group that I think is going to be most critical is the linebackers. I mean, you looked at what Knowles had at Oklahoma. You there?
Oh, wait one sec, boss man. We'll get to you after we finish the current question or a couple questions down the road. Yeah.
I think the linebackers are going to be the most critical, because, and it's mostly just mentality and technique. But when you talk about who is going to be that guy, it's really up in air. I don't know if it's going to be Cody Simon. I don't know if Tommy Eichenberg can be that guy either. The reality is I haven't seen, I guess Steel Chambers is a guy that flashed this year a little bit in EA, but I don't know who that is moving forward. I don't know who that is next year. So there's an opportunity for young guys, maybe a Sonny Styles if he gets, you know, puts on a little bit of weight, or CJ Hicks or CJ. Gabe Powers. I mean, there's opportunities there and there's talent. It's just going to be a matter of who they get developed and to play the way they want to play earliest. And obviously Cody Simon, when he gets healthy, I think is probably my lead candidate to be that guy.
I think that, first of all, guys, first for the Leo, I think this next year it'll be probably Jack Swear a lot. And then additionally, kind of moving forward, Gabe Powers, I think, fits that role kind of ideally. But I think that slot corner next year is going to be a really big like buy stock in whoever plays there, because I think they're going to, you know, have a chance to really create some chaos the same way. I mean, we saw Sean Wade create some chaos when he was at that kind of that slot corner role. He was able to get involved in blitzes, obviously did well in coverage, and just kind of had a huge year that 2019 year. I think that we could, maybe not as good of a year because that was really, really incredible, but I would definitely buy stock in whoever the slot corner is. And it could be a slew of guys. If it's, you know, if it's Jordan Hancock, you know, in year two getting a chance, I think that could be a really, you know, bright spot that I think a lot of people are overlooking. But thanks for the question, dog. I think Cody up next.
I do want to mention before we move on to Cody, that I think Denzel Burke, you're going to see a major jump in year two because of the new coaches coming in, and because you love to see year one to year two if a guy plays in year one. Whatever year it is for him, it could be his junior year. But if he play that first year they're a starter, that second year, that jump they make in the offseason is usually pretty significant. So I'm excited to see him make that jump.
I agree. The corners I think are going to be really good, and I'm excited to see them. Cody, were you up next? I can't remember who asked
yes, sir.
The first question. Yep, go ahead, Cody.
So kind of two-part follow-up from what Garrett was saying. When we brought in Knowles, we knew he was going to be really focused in on the linebackers. So how much of Washington being let go was the fact that we already knew that Knowles was going to take over that position group? Or is there any truth to the rumor that they asked Washington to kind of help out with the D-line and he got kind of ticked off, and then that's the reason that he was let go? Second part is, you know, the last couple of years, I mean, we had some decent linebackers. We've had linebackers that have been drafted, but we haven't had anyone that's been dominant, like, you know, of like
All-American,
you know, the Hawks, the Shaziers, all of that. So how much of that was potentially the scheme not really fitting with what Washington could do, or how much of that was Washington not really being able to recruit and develop? And I see James Yoder's in here listening, so he might be able to have something out on the Michigan side, but just wanted to see your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look at how highly praised the kid is coming out of high school, and just, it's not like we swung and missed on everybody. Baron Browning was a five-star all everything. Now he's an NFL starter, and a kid didn't play half the snaps of a game. So I think it falls solely on the shoulders of Al Washington. And it's not about like, was the scheme not something he can teach? What the fuck? We're at Ohio State. You better learn how to teach it, and you better do it better than anyone in the country. I mean, this is not, you're not at Bowling Green. You're not at, no disrespect to Cincinnati, but you're not at Cincinnati. You're not at a mid-major. You're at the premier institution in the United States of America. Like, you better coach it as well or better than anyone does in the country. But I think that's solely whose shoulders it falls on. I mean, I don't think Al's a bad coach. I think Al's actually a pretty good coach, but that's your job as a coach. And if your players look like his players looked, then, I mean, that's on you. It was just like when my players in 2016 were not great and it fell directly on my shoulders. I could give you 100 reasons why they didn't. It was malalignment of the offensive staff. They didn't like playing with JT Barrett because he couldn't throw it that well. I could give you 100 different excuses, but it's all bullshit, right? It fell on my shoulders. I didn't get them to play up to the standard that we had at Ohio State, and so I fixed it that offseason, right? It's been two straight years of the linebackers looking like dog shit. It never got fixed. So we can blame the scheme. We can blame Matt Barnes. We can blame Kerry Combs. Fuck, we can blame my uncle. My uncle loves to complain. We can blame him if we want to. It falls on Al Washington. It just does. Now, to your first point about did he balk at the idea of working with the D-line, I'm sure that was Ryan's suggestion, right? Or that was kind of him throwing out ideas to try to put this staff together. I don't believe for a second that Al Washington would balk at anything, because he knew the end result, if he did, was he would get fired. But I think it was just something that, you know what, Larry Johnson's not retiring. And I think Ryan had that in his head, like, Al played D-line. He has coached D-line before. If Larry retires, I could slide him to the D-line position because he might be better suited there. And then I can hire the back seven coaches, right? That's what he was thinking. Larry didn't retire, so Al was out.
Yeah, I mean, Al was gonna lose his room no matter what, and obviously it resulted in Al being out. But, you know, a huge part of this is, so Billy Davis was fired, and Al Washington was brought in to improve the linebacker room, and instead the linebacker room took a massive step backwards. And like you said, that falls squarely on the shoulders of Al Washington. And you know, it's crazy in the coaching world, because if the coaching world's like stocks and a lot of other things, like his stock, we talked about it last Friday, his stock was so high last year, even after the defense was just okay. His stock was so high. He had the Tennessee offer, like it was there waiting, and he turn it down to come back to Columbus. And it's just like a reminder that when you're hot as a coach, if you have a chance to go take a bigger job and you want to bet on yourself, if things are not your fault, then you have to go. And he didn't – I mean, I guess he chose to bet on himself and coming back and thinking that he could get a bigger job. But some things – you know, sometimes things don't always go. But I would challenge that. I don't think – I think he maybe Al Washington sometimes gets a little bit too much credit for being the recruiter. Zach, you and I always talk about like Ohio kids that, you know, grow up with, get, you know, with Buckeyes on their wall. You have to get those kids like that. You don't get credit for that kid. And he didn't really win a lot of national recruiting battles.
Well, that's what recruiting is, right? Recruiting. Mm-hmm. You want to be a great recruiter at Ohio State. You better go sign you a big time like Baron Browning. Go to Texas and take a 5-star out of there. That's what Georgia's doing. Right. That's what A&M's doing. That's what Clemson's doing. That's what Alabama's doing. If you're just going to take the top kids in Ohio and 1 year, two of them are big time recruits, 5-stars or top 50 players or whatever they are. That doesn't make you a great recruiter. Like that means you did a good job and got a kid you were supposed to get, right? Like Ohio State is supposed to get CJ Hicks. I get it. Sometimes they don't, but you don't, that's not like a example of a dynamic recruiter. Like go to South Florida. And anybody that's recruited can attest to this. You go down to South Florida, you go to American Heritage High School, you go to St. Thomas Aquinas, you go to Deerfield Beach High School, you go to some of these big-time high schools, you are going against, I mean, it's like walking down the red carpet of college football. You're going to see any name that you've ever heard in the country of an assistant coach. You're going to see them in those high schools. So it is the best of the best. It's like sending your SEAL Team 6 in to kill Osama bin Laden, right? Your very, 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 very elite coaches are going to those places in recruiting. You stick a guy in Cincinnati, it's like, okay, so he knows a lot of people in Cincinnati, so he should be able to keep the Cincinnati kids in Ohio if we want them. It's not impressive to me. It's not impressive to anyone, really. So I think that's what you have to look
for. And the fact of the matter is, like this last year, we were willing to try out anybody at linebacker, and that's the problem. Like we got a couple running backs playing linebacker, a tight end playing linebacker. Like we're literally trying anybody at linebacker. It's like you want to talk about a dynamic recruiter. I mean, that's, you know, Brian Hartline. We're not going to have to go try corners out at wide receiver.
Right. So, Hartline is getting the receiver he wants, no matter where the fuck he lives. Washington, mm-hmm. G. Scott, I'll get him. Texas, Jackson Smith and Jigba, I'll take him. Like, you name it. And that's what you have to do. No different than when I got Chris Olave from San Diego or Garrett Wilson from Austin. Like, the kid's in Austin, Texas. He should not go to Ohio State. But, I mean, I know there's a little backstory. Mm-hmm. But either way, that's when you show how you recruit. When you can go, you know, halfway across the world and go take the best receiver in the country or best linebacker in the country and get him to come to Columbus. Now you earned your stripes.
Yeah, I would argue a more dynamic job than what Al's done is Tony Alford. Tony Alford went and got Trayvon Henderson, but without even ever having him on campus. That is a dynamic job building relationships. But College Football Unleashed, I see you in here. Welcome. If you got a question, we're ready. Just throw those hands up, and we're taking any and all questions. Go ahead, James.
Hey, gents. Thanks for letting me be part of this. I really do appreciate that. This might be a dumb question, and maybe it's for people like me, you know, who don't know the ins and outs. And I live in Topeka, so I get this question off my friends is, how is our defense within 2 years has fallen off a cliff? We remember what Halfley left. It was a great unit, and it seemed like that was a great blueprint. Then, but obviously that didn't turn out the way that we thought it would.
Translate.
And, you know, why? I mean, people have already touched on that already.
Like, how does that happen? No, we got you. We got you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
I have my own thought on it, but Zach, go ahead.
For a position group, I kind of missed the question.
Oh, it's like just like the defense as a whole. How do you go from having that good of a 2019, how sound they were, you know, and creating negative plays and turnovers to just falling off the cliff in 2020?
Yeah, so I mean, playing at that level, it's a grind. Right, it's a grind, a daily grind of getting coached and corrected, and the attention to detail, tiny, tiny details that when you're on your game A to Z, and you're getting coached and developed and held to that standard, and every day, if you take the slightest wrong step that day in meetings, you're getting it fixed. Right, if that continues to go on, you're like a sword that has been sharpened daily, right? The minute it doesn't go on, it's not that you just forgot how to play football and now you suck. It's a slowly gradual decline where you're not getting coached up maybe as detailed or as thorough or as effectively. And slowly those things start to slip away when you fast forward 12 months of not getting coached as well every single day. It's just a bag of shit you're looking at, especially comparatively, right? Especially compared to what it was the year before. So college football, I don't know how that if people truly understand like how intense and how minute everything is. I mean, you look, go to an offensive line meeting, and I mean, it'll be, a coach will spend 10 minutes on one step on one play, right? Like stepping with the right foot angle, the right length of step, like what they did with their left hand, when they stepped, like such minute details that if you're not getting coached like that every single minute of every single day, you're not going to be maximized. And I think Jeff Hafley got that done. He got that defense maximized. And obviously when he left, the quality of coaching went down. I mean, that's obvious, right? Otherwise they would have been at least in the same hemisphere as they used to be. Like you could convince me losing two first round corners, they were going to be a little worse in pass defense, but not a dramatic drop off. Right. So I think that's the biggest thing.
And I'm a theory guy, Zach. My belief is that the personality of Hafley, the things that made him a good coach, strengthened and helped the fact that he was calling plays. He struck me much more as a chess player. He liked being up in the box. Enjoyed looking like plays ahead almost. Where Kerry Combs is such an emotional leader and such a relationship guy that it's almost like I'd rather have the chess player calling defensive plays than the guy that's like in tune and locked in. And really excited and cheering on from play to play. I want the guy that's like really thinking and looking ahead. So that's just my personality.
Well, and
go ahead.
You do need to be very advanced in the scheme on your side of the ball to be a coordinator and call plays, either side, offense or defense. Now you can be both, right? Tom Herman was really good at being a player's coach, getting excited, getting emotional, like getting kids to play for him, inspiring kids, but he was also very, very smart, right? Luke Fickell was that way, right? Chris Ash was that way. You can be both, and Ohio State should have both. You cannot. You can also be just a fucking nerd that knows football so well, and your offense is so wealth, the Mike Leeches, right? Where you're just a kind of maybe a weirdo, but you're such a good
a
coach.
Mad scientist type.
Yes. And players, what do players respect? Well, players want to succeed. That's the most important thing to them, right? If I'm a young kid and I'm that good at football, I want to get better and succeed. And so if you have a system that is helping us succeed, it is a good system, it's working, they're inspired by that. Right. And then so you can be that. You cannot be just a rah-rah emotional leader without being the brilliant mind to run your side of the ball. You can't do it because you're just not smart enough with well versed enough in football scheme to correct issues, see issues, like coach the way I was talking about. You got to be that first.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the game can slip away when it's like such teetering emotion. Sometimes, like if it's always about rah rah about celebrating every play, not saying I love Kerry, but that's kind of one of the things it's like the what kind of personality do you want your quarterback to have? And then I take that into like the quarterback of like the offense or defense or whatever in terms of calling plays.
Right.
So that's that. That's just my tin hat theory from good old Akron, Ohio. But Brady, you got a question?
Yeah. I was looking. Seeing that Zach Harrison was coming back, do coaches ever like push kids that are less talented than like the freshman five star like Sawyer or JTT? Does that happen in the meeting rooms?
Like push them out the door?
Yeah, basically push them out the door to put the better player, more talent, higher ceiling at the end.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you just be honest with the kids. That's what you have to do. Be honest with them, right? Like, I'm not going to sit here and say Zach Harrison's getting beat out, although I do love the two young kids. But Zach Harrison, I'm still surprised when kids announce stuff like this. It's like, coming back from where? Like, dude, I watched him play all year. I studied the film. He's not an NFL football player yet. I don't care what he was ranked in high school. I don't care what people thought he was going to be, Chase Young. I don't care about any of that. Like, if you're honest with the kid, he's not an NFL player. Like, where's he going to go? I mean, go to the NFL. They'll spit him out in a year. So if that's what he wants his future to be, great. If he wants to stay and learn from Larry Johnson another year and possibly increase his chance of success, then that's what he should do. But I've never heard of a coach. I mean, there's been times when a kid maybe isn't going to play much. You have an honest conversation with him like, hey, listen, I think JTT and Jack Sawyer have they're dead even with you. I think they might pass you by. So, you know, we want you to come back, but I just want you to be aware that might happen. And we did it with James Clark, was a receiver who played for us a little bit, but it was like, yeah, he wasn't. You know, he was getting passed by. And so we just told him that. And we didn't tell him he wasn't any good because he was pretty good. He was getting passed by and we wanted him to know that. And he transferred to Virginia Tech. Like, that happens. And if a kid's making that decision, he might jump to the NFL. But as long as you're honest with the kid about the situation at hand, so he has an idea what he's walking into, you'd hate for a kid to come back, say, I'm coming back to Ohio State, not knowing that you think that, and then he gets beat out and becomes cancerous because he's pissed, right, in the locker room. You don't want that. So you have to just lay it out there with honesty. And I know that's that's a rarity in football, coaches being honest. but that's what you have to do.
Yeah, thanks.
Yep.
You're welcome, Brady. Hey, any other questions, guys? Keep firing them. We'll be here. We usually try to go about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. Oh, go ahead, Coach Football Unleashed.
Oh, hey, Zach. I'm just kind of off topic, but I seen a tweet a bit ago about when JTT was recruited, there was talks of him playing basketball too. I'm guessing you probably don't know about that specific situation, but did you ever have a kid do that, and how would that work?
Not play. So we did at Florida. We had a kid. Two kids played baseball. One kid played basketball. Cornelius Ingram was a tight end that ended up playing for the Eagles. And we called him tight end. He was a big receiver, but he was just big enough to be a tight end. But he played for Florida's basketball team. And so we let it happen. He tried to do it as a quarterback, and that's when we told him, like, you can't do that. Like, quarterbacks have to be 12. I mean, that's a full-time 12-month out of the year job. But he switched to receiver / tight end and was able to do it. We didn't have anybody do it at Ohio State. We did have a couple of my players ran track. Devin Smith was one. He was a high jumper. And so how you do that, you know, you just have to make sure it's clear with the track coach and with the athlete, like Devin, that Devin, the track coach, myself, Urban, and Mickey Marotti all sat down and had a meeting after football season. What, I think 2 years he did it. And said, listen, here's the deal. He's a football player first. We're going to let him run track. We're going to be cognizant of the fact that he might have a meet that day. So Mickey's not going to lift his lower body that day. You know, he's not going to blow his legs out right before he goes and runs in the 4x1 or in the high jump or whatever. So he, you have to make a plan with the other sports coach. And then the kid just has to stick to the plan. The hardest thing, honestly, becomes academics. It's really hard already to play a demanding sport like football at a level that Ohio State is at and then succeed in the classroom. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to stay awake in classes because you're so tired from the workouts that you did at 6 a.m. I mean, it's hard to do that. You add in track practice or basketball practice into that fold, that's exhausting. And so it's really, really hard to do, but I've seen it done. I mean, Devin did it. He went to Big Tens in the high jump, jumped 7-1, I think. You know, he might have got 7-2. And so I've seen it happen. So it is possible. Usually, what I always told kids is you can do it when you're ready to do it, right? When you're a great player on the field, when you're over here getting extra work in, you know, acting like a grown-ass man, handling your business, when you're doing that here as a football player, then we'll say, all right, you're mature enough to go run track. Now you can, right? You earned that. So JTT playing basketball, I wouldn't let him right now. I mean, obviously he's not on the team right now, but it would be a conversation like, listen, man, go be the starting DN at Ohio State. If you're a starting DN at Ohio State and you're handling your business, you're improving, then we'll have the conversation about you playing basketball. Before then, why? Why would you do that? You're just taking away from your development and your ability to get on the field in what is your premier sport. Like, that would just be dumb, and I would be a bad coach if I let you do that.
Every football player wants to be a hooper. On JTT, I love the kid. I think he's got big upside. But I don't think he's good enough to play for Ohio State hoops right now, at least definitely not right now. A couple of things. In high school, he was a big and played as a big. Yeah, he does have spots of him, you know, handling the ball. But, you know, to move over to go play basketball, you can't really be a 6'4 big, even in college. I know Jayshon Tate did it some years ago. He was 6'4, played the 3 and the 4, and he was you know, a twitchier athlete, super, super active and in good shape year round. I think that was part one of the recruiting tools, because I know that Washington extended him a basketball scholarship offer as well.
That's what I used to tell kids. I used to tell kids all the time. You go to DC. If anyone's ever been to DC, I know. I see my guy Mike Daniels in here, new running back coach at Georgia Tech. Shout out, Coach Daniels, and he will probably be able to attest to this. I recruited DC for like 5 years, and in DC public schools, you walk around those schools and you'll see some kids. You're like, holy shit, who is that kid? And it'll be some 6'5", 270-pound athlete, and they'll be like, oh, he's just a basketball player. He don't play football. And I'm like, what? Why? And they're like, kid just loves. But there's, I'm telling you right now, in DC public schools, there's 10 Division I offensive linemen, minimally, that only play basketball. And I used to, every time I'd be like, let me talk to him. And I would talk to him and be like, bro, have you ever watched the NBA? You're the 4 or 5 on your basketball team at 6'5", 270. Guys in the NBA are 6'11". Like, you are, guys that are 6'5 are guards in the NBA. Now go look at offensive tackles. 6'5" tackles and guards are everywhere in the NFL. Like, it's just dumb. But
were you that coach that they always make fun of? Like, hey, come here, son. Your hand belong in the dirt.
Oh yeah, not that got made fun of. The high school coaches used to do this to me all the time. They'd be like, Coach, I need this kid to come out and play. Can you talk to him and try to help me get him to come play? Like, they'd get me to try to recruit the kid to come play, or they'd be like, hey, this kid's a tight end, but he just thinks he's a receiver, and I know he's not Ohio State's level, but will you just tell him that he'd be more valuable as a tight end so I can try to get him to block a D end? they use you because they know you're trying to get their player, so you're gonna do whatever they ask. They use the shit out of you, man. They put you on a spot, make you ruin a kid's dreams.
we have a lot. Yeah, everybody wants to hoop. I swear. Go ahead, Eric. You got a question?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hey, Zach, I got a coaching question for you. So when you look at coaches who have coached in college or the NFL, and you look at their careers, you see a lot of them have coached so many different positions, whether they coach, you know, O-line for a few years, running back, receiver. How exactly does that work? And so are those skills transferable? I know you talked about Washington, maybe they played that position or anything like that. And then if you did not coach wide receivers, which position would you have coached?
So I think it's less common than you think, switching positions. And a lot of times it might be because a guy's a great recruiter. They just want to bring him on and they only have a receiver job open.
A certain title.
Like, it's like Stan Drayton came to Ohio State as a receiver coach. He didn't know shit about receivers, like nothing, but they brought him in because they wanted Stan Drayton on the staff. They wanted a great recruiter. And so they put him at receiver coach, and then Urban came in and moved him back to running back coach where he belonged. Cause he's a great running back coach. Like, it's hard when you're studying a position for 20 years and all of a sudden they're like, now you're going to coach receiver. And you're like, what the fuck? Stalk blocking? What the hell? What is that? Right? So it doesn't happen as often as you think. Sometimes tight end coaches slide to be O-line coaches because most of the time you don't give the O-line job to a guy that's never coached O-line. That's more of a promotion for a guy that's been coaching tight ends for, you know, 7 years. And then you can make him the O-line coach because it's so important of a position. But I don't think it's as common as you think. Now, if I was going to coach another position, and what I was probably going to have to get into was the quarterback position because I wanted to be a coordinator, and it's hard. It's hard to be a coordinator as a receivers, running backs coach. Like, you got to either be a line coach, which in my opinion they can't do both. You got to move them to tight ends, or you have to be a quarterback guy. It's those two positions that get coordinator jobs. And so I started to, my last year at Ohio State, I started really studying Ryan and what he did with quarterbacks. And I'm not even in the realm of Ryan Day as a quarterback's coach, but I started trying to learn it at his level because I understood the pass game as well as anyone. It was more the quarterback fundamentals, progressions, reads, the things he taught him to do in protections and maneuvering pockets and just high level quarterback stuff. That was what I started really getting into. And if you listen to the podcast, like, I'm obsessed with athlete development and high level teaching. And so it was the most exciting thing I had going because I feel like I mastered the receiver position. I knew the offensive line position as well as I was ever going to as a receiver coach because I had such admiration for Steve Adazio. But the quarterback position was the one where I wasn't an expert. And so that's where I would have wanted to go next if I stayed in coaching.
Never coached. I got nothing on that one. But great question, Eric. You have another one, or we want to get the next question?
And then, yeah, just on a follow-up, Zach, just out of curiosity, did you ever consider or ever want to explore the NFL?
Personally, no. I mean, I would. If I wanted to get back into coaching, that's the route I would go, because they don't give a shit what's happened to you, what your story is. They'll take anybody they'll take anybody that can coach, honestly. But I don't want to get back in coaching. I just don't want to do it. I mean, I'm loving this side of life. I'm loving the podcast and everything that I'm building here in this company. I love the other business things that I have going on. And most importantly, I love the quality time I get with my kids. I mean, I have my two older kids over half the time, and I have my two younger kids all the time. And I just want to be here for them as much as I can. I want to coach baseball teams and coach football teams, and I want to go to every practice, go to every game. I want to be as involved a parent as you could possibly be. I want to be that guy that they're like, damn, that guy's kind of overbearing, because I don't know how you're not as a parent. I don't know how you're not coaching your kid every play in a sport, or teaching them every day in some academic side of things, whether it's math or whatever, or teaching them something. Like, I'm teaching my oldest son and my oldest daughter finances right now and how to invest money. They have investment accounts. Like, I would never be able to do that if I was coaching football at any level, outside of youth sports. I mean, even high school coaches, they grind their ass off. So I don't want to. Just for that reason, I want to be able to teach my kid about the stock market and about personal finance, about credit cards, about baseball, and how to torque your back leg to hit a home run, things like that. That's what I want to do now. But if I wanted to, yeah, that is absolutely where I would aim my sights, is on the National Football League.
Awesome. Damn, all those reasons you don't want to. Oh, for sure, Eric. All those reasons you don't want to get back in a coach. You didn't mention me at all.
And Chris, I like hanging out with Chris every day. That's the main reason. Screw my kids. I like hanging out with Chris. That's why.
Yeah, you hear that, Justine? It's because of me. next question. Who do we got? Anybody got anything? Oh, yeah. My boy Abe requested get Abe in here. Oh, man. I hope everyone had a good week. This week really dragged for me, Zach. You know, outside the morning stuff, everything just been dragging like crazy. Well,
you got drama at the radio station. That's always gonna
man. It's always drama at the radio station. I tell everybody this.
I'm trying to get back in the gym. That's my struggle right now. It's so damn cold outside. I don't want to go outside.
No, I feel that. I gotta hit the gym. I go to the gym to take off frustration of the stuff that happens here, dog. It's man, crazy.
Go ahead. Who's got a question? You said someone had a question, right?
I do.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Talk to
me. Go ahead.
The entire defense was complete trash this past year, but I'm not trying to be mean to no player, but Bryson Shaw was like the worst defensive player I've ever seen. Like, I'm not sure how he started over Court Williams the entire year. Can you tell me why the coaches made that choice, or like,
I mean, no coach plays a player that's not as good as his backup ever. And so I agree he needs to get better, and I agree that the defense was not good, or as you said, trash. I mean, you're not wrong. But I mean, that kid, Bryson Shaw, played over Court Williams because Bryson Shaw was better in practice. That's why. And that you can, as bad as Bryson Shaw was, Court Williams would have been worse. That's what practice film told a bunch of coaches that kind of know a thing or two about it. Now, I'm not saying that they definitely didn't have the answers on the field, but they are, by him playing, they're telling you that you know, Ryan Day is heavily involved in that too. If Bryson Shaw is not playing as well as Court Williams, Ryan Day is going to walk in and be like, "What the fuck are we doing? Put Court in. I'm watching practice film."
Yeah, I want to push back on that a little bit, Zach. Do you ever like get instances where like guys are great practice players, but like when those lights come on, it just doesn't work, and then maybe you think about giving the guy a chance that flashes every once in a while? Because it was bad, dog. It was real bad.
No, it was bad, and that happens. But Court Williams played. He played in games. I didn't see him I didn't see him do anything. I mean, I didn't see a play where I'm like, damn, this kid needs to play. Like, why isn't he playing a ton more? Now you want to go to a different conversation. Why was Tylenol Williams? Why was Tyleek Williams not playing more against Michigan?
Same deal.
That's a great question, right? Because he showed me on tape that he can play. And I know Larry had his reasons, and they're obviously probably really good reasons, but I didn't see anything out of Court that tells me like, oh, he should have been playing over Bryson Shaw. I just think they weren't getting coached very well, and they didn't perform very well. They need to do better. The whole group, Bryson, Court, all of them.
Yeah. I thought Court played really well down the stretch. I mean, he made a couple big hits for me, and you know, I'm a fan, so that big hit, I'm sold on it. I just think sometimes, like, when those lights come on or just something, like when a guy is, like, bad play after bad play, at some point you wonder, you know, would it hurt to give maybe the younger kid a chance? But, you know, I hate bashing my kids, but.
No, it is what it is.
That was a really good question. Yeah, straight up. Next question, what do you guys got?
I have a question.
We'll go Abe, then Zach, right?
Perfect.
By the way, Zach, Chris, you guys do a great job.
I appreciate it, man.
I love it. Yeah, so my question is about the college football playoffs.
Yeah.
Now, how would you design the playoff to keep the integrity of the bowl games currently? Like, for example, if it was a 12-team playoff, how would you, like, bring the significance back to the Rose Bowl and all those other bowl games? Like, how would you design that?
Have an answer, Zach.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. I would strip conference affiliation with that. What I would do to make the other games more important is instead of, like, you know having number 5 play number 11, I think I would just go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 for those other major bowls and not even worry about conference affiliation. And that way we can get some cooler matchups that maybe we wouldn't see or wouldn't really get a chance to see. That's what I would do first. That's what I would start with. I think that would really help. Yeah,
I think that might help. I mean, I don't think a kid gives a shit if they finished 8th or 9th. But to the point, I mean – it's going to be hard to do it'd be like in the NFL if now the Browns had to go play the freaking Jaguars in a game. It's like no one gives a shit about that game. Like it doesn't matter, right? It's never going to completely matter. One thing I think they could do and should do and need to do that I mentioned on the show is move the postseason awards to postseason. Like move the awards to after the Rose Bowl, the Peach Bowl. The Peach Bowl would have had Kenny Pickett playing against Kenneth Walker III because all those awards are still out there. They still need to put on a show, and they still need to show up and play. Because here's the thing: we can talk about risk of injury and all this other shit. Half of those kids that sat out bowl games are going to go play in the Senior Bowl, and it's like, oh, are they not worried about getting injured at the Senior Bowl? No, it's because there is value in going to the Senior Bowl. So, what value can we place on the Rose Bowl? I mean, I think one, NFL scouts could place a huge value on it. They should be out in droves at all these games so that kids know, damn. All 32 teams are going to be there in the Peach Bowl. I need to go off to give them a good impression of me. That's one. And two, I think the postseason awards will be an incentive, right? That's a carrot to play. Like, why play? Well, I'm trying to win the fucking Heisman. That's why. If I'm Kenneth Walker III, I'm playing in that Peach Bowl and trying to rip off 5 touchdowns so I can get that bronze trophy. So I think that's two things they could do. And I don't know if the rankings fix it. I think it would be fun to see that. But there was also something cool about the Rose Bowl, you know, back in the day being the Big Ten champ against the Pac-12 champ or Pac-10 champ back then, and you just knew it was going to be Ohio State, USC, or whoever. I think that was kind of cool, but that day has passed. Like anything else, that time is over.
And thank you for that. In addition to that, will the season be longer if this happened, like if it was a longer playoffs?
Probably. I mean, they're into making money, and cutting games loses money. So
didn't Urban say if they did that, they need to add more scholarships for the sport?
I mean, yeah, they should, right? It's just a longer season equals more injury, equals more wear and tear on the body. Like they should, or what they should do is take away the 12th game that they added. But see, you get deep into athletic departments and how they operate. That 12th game, right? Whoever it may be, when Ohio State plays Akron, in the horseshoe, that game revenue funds probably 1 to 2 women's sports. So you take away that game and make it a playoff game, Ohio State better get a kickback that equals to no less than the revenue from that one game that they added, or else you got to cut women's diving or women's field hockey or something. And then if you cut women's field hockey, you got to cut a men's sport. So now men's wrestling's gone. So it's deeper than just that. And Ohio State or football players are kind of the whores, right? You send them out there to make all the money so everyone else can benefit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't have anything to add to that. That's, you know, that's hit on the head. I don't know how big of a, you know, improvement they can make, but that is something. Thank you for the question, Abe. Zach, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. What's up, guys? How we doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Awesome. So my question is for Zach. Basically, how did you build your coaching toolbox? I know, like, as a young coach, like, where do you get your drills? Where do you figure out kind of, like, what style you want to use or, like, what type of spins or twists you want to put on certain things that you do and kind of develop your own style? So, like, do you have resources available to you? Do you just pick up as, like, a GA what you like from different people? Kind of just how you developed your own style, I guess.
So I think I this is a great question, by the way. I appreciate you asking this because I could talk about this honestly for hours. I think it's kind of a journey, right, as a position coach, because you're on a quest to become the best at your craft, right? Like Larry Johnson right now is the best defensive line coach in football. That's just what he is. And there's other ones that are really, really good, but I think Larry's the best. And when you're on that ascension to try to, or that chase to become that, you're constantly talking to, like I talk to Jeff Scott all the time. I talk to Billy Napier. I talk to other receiver coaches when we run into each other on the road, catch each other at a hotel or whatever on the road recruiting. You just kind of pick their brain, like what do they do? And Jeff Scott used to send me his drill tape. I'd send him mine, and we'd talk on the phone about it and go through like what is he doing with his guys. Like I got probably 5 ball reception drills from Jeff Scott because his guys, like, I mean, granted he had great players, but DeAndre Hopkins' ball skills were fucking nuts. And I'm like, what does he do with him? I know the kid's talented, but what is he doing to provoke that excellence out of the kid, right? And so that's what I did initially, and then I found myself in probably 2015-ish, where I was like, all right, I keep doing this, and I don't ever get anything from anyone. Like when I see a drill they do, I'm like, yeah, I like my drill a little bit better though. And I felt like I had a scientific reason why it was better. And so once you reach that point, I started doing, and I really learned it from Larry Johnson. What he does to develop his drills and what he teaches is he just watches tape. You just watch tape and see, all right, when a kid, you're looking for when a kid fails or when a kid succeeds, right? That moment of delineation, like, was it a win or loss, right? A kid runs a slant route. Did he win or did he lose? And then you got to ask yourself, why? Why did he win or why did he lose? And from that, you can get to the finer point of what you should be teaching him or what went wrong, and you can create a drill to simulate that and do it 100 times with him, and that should never happen again. Right. And so that's what I would do. I would see something come up in practice. I'm like, damn, I don't really drill that. And I would create a drill. Me and Keenan Bailey would go out in the indoor and we'd create a drill, right? Create a drill and walk it through with each other and kind of fine tune it. And then you do the drill. And sometimes you're like, that drill is badass. I love that drill. Sometimes you walk away saying, damn, that drill sucked. That was stupid. I'm not doing that ever again. Right. But slowly, by trial and error and from watching film, you're developing drills and teaching tools that then you can keep enhancing and refining until you have what you consider an excellent drill. Right. And so I did that all the time. And the offseason is a great time to do it. I mean, ball reception drills, all we ever did was catch jugs. Then we got a tennis ball machine. And then we started doing wall ball, tennis balls, wiffle golf balls, all kinds of ball reception drills, just because we went out there and said, all right, how can I get this kid to concentrate and focus on a moving object into his hand? Right. How can I distract him? So then we started doing jugs machines with a pop-up dummy right in front of him. Right. And right when the guy shooting the jugs yells ball, he slaps the pop-up out of the way. So he has a split second to find the ball and catch it. Right. He only has a small window to locate the football. Cause that, and I could, like I said, I could talk for hours. Locating the football is one of the hardest things a receiver has to do. You go out on a football field and you run a slant route with just you and the quarterback. There's nothing out there, but you, the quarterback, and the ball. It's really easy to find. Now you go in the horseshoe with 100,000 fans and D line and O line arms and heads, and the ball just pops out on you last second, and you have to be able to find it fast, react, and catch it. So you have to create that in a drill setting. So that's how I did it. Once I felt like I was kind of on top of the position, I really felt like I knew it as well as anyone in the country, I started saying, all right, what is a real life situation that my players are going to have to face, and how can I prepare them for that? And I would create shit, just make it up, draw it up in the dirt. That's what Larry Johnson does every year. Every year, Larry Johnson has all kinds of drills that he just drew up. No other D-line coach is doing them unless they stole them from him. Which is what you do early in your career, right? You just steal drills from great coaches because you're like, well, this guy's really, really good. He's doing this drill. I'm going to do that drill because that's what he's doing. So it's a lot of thievery until you feel like you really mastered a position. And then you just keep pushing to try to enhance your understanding and development tools of that position. That was probably long-winded, but that's my answer.
Yeah, I really appreciate the answer. A lot of good information. I'm just a young coach myself, just kind of figuring out, you know, how to do things the right way, why you do things, like the purpose behind different things.
That's
so,
that helps a lot. But that mentality is everything, right? If you approach your drills and your toolbox of developmental tools with that mindset. Like, why am I doing this drill? Urban used to say it all the time. Why are you doing that drill? And he would ask you, he doesn't know the answer. He doesn't care the answer. He just wants to hear you explain it. Because there's coaches, even at Ohio State, that would be like, well, this is one of my favorite drills. Like, it's been really good at developing D linemen. And he's like, that you didn't answer the question at all. Why are you doing it? That's not a why.
It's like George Winfield did the whole broom thing.
Yeah, Whitfield, yeah. Yeah, he brought a broom. He'd take quarterbacks on the beach and sweep sand at their feet. And it's like, what the fuck is that doing? Other than you think it looks cool on Instagram. Like, that is dumb as shit. And you can't tell me one good reason why that would help a quarterback. You can't. But coaches do stuff like that. Like receive.
Right. And then, go ahead. Well, then, like, the smart kids are the ones that want to be there. Your best players, they question, you know, why they are doing it. So they have to believe in the reason you're doing it, too. If it's going to be successful.
Well, yeah, because that comes down to competency, right? Those kids are trying to figure out if they think you're competent as a coach. And if they do think you're competent, they're going to buy in a lot quicker because they think, wow, this guy's really good. He's going to make me better, right? If you just are doing drills and they're doing them, like, I don't see any improvement. I don't know why we're doing this. Now they're questioning your competency, and now it's going to be hard to get them to buy into you as a coach. So that's huge. It's huge to know the why and have, you know, and fully understand why you're doing what you're doing. And does it actually work? That's the other thing, right? Not only why are you doing it, but does the drill actually help them? Does it actually make them better?
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your answer, Zach. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Good luck, Zach. We got time for maybe one or two more. And then obviously, guys, if you don't get your question today, our reviews are always open. And you can leave a question there. And then we do mailbag every single Friday morning. And then as well as we do this in later in the day on Fridays. Go ahead, Nick.
Yo, Coach Smith, Chris, what's going on?
What's up, man?
What's going on, G?
Yeah, so Coach Smith, man, I love when you do your breakdowns, like your film breakdowns, breaking down the games play by play.
Yeah.
So my question is, when you're breaking down the games, are you watching like the TV copy, or are you watching like, you know, like game film, like we watch, you know, players and coaches watching the film? And if so, how do you get access to the, like, I know the NFL has like the All 22, I think it is, or is there any way, like, I was just curious on how you break down the film when you do it, because you do it so in depth.
So I have a couple different people that are coaches that give me their logins. So it's entirely illegal, and they're not at Ohio State, because I know that would be the quickest way to get my plug pulled is if I'm watching film from Ohio State. But I got a couple coaches that give me logins to the All 22 film. And, you know, nowadays with Huddle and not Huddle, with Exos and the way film goes, I mean, they have access to any team in the country. And so I can go jump on there and watch the All 22. But I will watch TV copies, too, because you could see stuff in TV copies that you can't see in All 22. The more close up shots, like what happened to a kid when a kid dropped a ball, like did he take his eyes off it? You can't see that shit on 22 film. You know what I mean? So that's how I do it. And honestly, I think it's completely unfortunate and it's dumb of the NCAA to keep the All 22 film locked down. They should have a subscription service where you can pay $100 a month or whatever it is to have access to that, because they could make a killing on it. And I don't nowadays, I got it before when they were like, oh, we don't want all these other teams to have our cut ups or our film. Nowadays, it shit is everywhere. You can get any film in the country whenever you want it.
And also for playoff games, ESPN does do the skybox and the other stuff, so you can get a lot of those angles, but not for normal games, just for the playoff games, they make those available.
Yeah, I don't even know how to find that, though.
Yeah, I was just curious, because I'm like, your breakdowns are so in-depth. Like, me as a former O-lineman, like, I'm sure, you know, it's easier to watch the line, but it's like, you know, you're watching the DBs and all that stuff down the field, and I just know, like, with the film, you know, the players and coaches watch, of course, it's easy to break that down. I'm like, TV cops is a little bit harder.
Oh, but yeah.
Yeah, I was just curious how you did it. So,
well, that's appreciate what I, it. That's what I did the first year I did this. I was just trying to do it off TV copies because I didn't know how to get the film. And then finally, I was getting so frustrated. Like, I don't know what happened on that play because they never showed a replay of it, right? Like, I would know that the left guard fucked up, but they would never show it on film. I'm like, why did you not show what happened there? Like, that kid just, he went the wrong way or whatever it was, and they wouldn't show it. And I get so pissed. And finally, I texted a couple friends of mine, and I was like, bro, can I please get your login to Exos so I can watch this film? And now I got it. Until they kick me off, then I'm screwed.
Well, thank you. Zach, do you have any closing thoughts before we close this down?
No, man, I love this. I love the question and answer. I hope everyone enjoys listening that don't participate. And if you haven't checked out this week's shows, please listen. We're pushing. We're 69th in the world right now, trying to push for top 50. That's our goal. So if you could go on, leave a 5-star review and drop a question. If you don't want to have your voice on the space, just leave a 5-star review with an anonymous name and type a question. And Chris will pull it and we'll answer it on next week's mailbag on Friday episode. And also the trick I learned was if you unsubscribe on the, not from Patreon, if you're a Patreon subscriber, don't unsubscribe to that. But on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, if you unsubscribe and resubscribe, we'll trick the algorithm and it'll help our show jump. So if you could do that for us, we appreciate it. And thank you for helping make this grow. I appreciate it, everybody. Chris, I appreciate you running this for me. And we will be back next Friday at 2 o'clock. And obviously the morning show all week next week. So Menace out.
I'm going to go unsubscribe. I'm going to go unsubscribe on Patreon, like you said, right now.
See, and I'll drive 30 minutes and kick your ass, Johnny.
Chris, you ain't kicking Johnny's ass or anybody's ass. What are you talking about?
Johnny went to an all-ginger school growing up.
Yeah, did you guys see that tweet? I see Florida Corey's in here. He knew that. He's been sitting on that information.
You know how tough you got to be to survive in all-ginger school?
you know how tough you don't have to be to walk in as a non-ginger into an all-ginger school and take everyone's lunch money?
O'Doyle rules.
Appreciate you stopping by, Johnny and Corey. I see you were in there. Again, thank you everybody for listening.
Ashley in here, too. Yeah, everybody's in here. We appreciate all you.
So we will be back next week. Appreciate it. Menace out.